Hello again, I'm Adam Shapiro, and welcome to Talkonomics. I invited someone in today who is a friend, but who has a story that I have always loved. Monica Crowley, who you see regularly on the Fox News Channel and on the Fox Business Network, and who has her own radio programs, has written several books, is joining us today. And it was the book, What the Bleep Happened to My Country.
No, What the Bleep Just Happened
to My Country was when I really started to get to know you.
Yes.
Because I read the book and I said, okay. Because part of what you describe in that book is kind of my story. You refer to people who are happy warriors. And what causes people like me, I grew up, I've referred at times to the loony left, but I grew up in what is a very traditional left-wing kind of family. And I have become far more conservative than anyone in my family.
I'm very proud of you, Adam Shapiro.
Well, as I've grown older, I think I might have said colder, which is what I'd be accused of sometimes, but it's not.
No.
It's not. I think the canards about people who are conservative are a problem and the stereotypes. And you point this out in everything you do. But first, before we get into those issues, what I love about you, among many things, is how you reached out to Richard Nixon years ago, because I think that shows real ambition. So tell me the story, because I think people need to know it.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on Talkonomics. I'm a huge fan of yours, and you're a dear friend, and
thanks.
I really appreciate this. And thank you also for asking this question, because a lot of time has passed since I began working for President Nixon, so it sort of receded into my own history, and not a lot of people ask me about it, so I really appreciate the question. I was a junior at Colgate studying political science. I had a phenomenal conservative professor who taught a course on national security. And because I was pretty much the only conservative kid on the campus, and he was the only conservative professor on the campus, he became my mentor. And as I was getting ready to go home between my junior and senior years for the summer, I asked him for some advice because I fell in love with national security, American foreign policy. So he went to his bookshelf and he pulled four books off of his shelf and handed them to me. And he said, go home this summer, read these books. When you come back in the fall, we'll talk about what you learned from them and then how to parlay it into a career, State Department, CIA, NSA, whatever it might be. So the first book that I chose to read of those he lent to me was a book by Richard Nixon called 1999, Victory Without War. And at that time, Nixon was writing a new foreign policy book every 2 years. So at that point, this was his most recent foreign policy book. And Adam, it so blew me away. It so changed the way I thought about America, our place in the world, the exercise of American power, the application of power, that I sat down and I wrote him a letter. And it was a substantive letter. It dealt with the issues he raised in the book. And at the end, I put in like a throwaway line like, gee, Mr. President, I know you're really busy, but I would love to have the chance just to shake your hand and thank you for your service to the country and for writing this book. I mailed the letter, completely forgot about it. About a month later, I went to my mother's mailbox. I was getting ready to go back to college. And there was a handwritten note from Richard Nixon in my mailbox. And that my letter to him and his letter back to me changed my life. It set me on the course of being on television and radio and writing books and having a column at the Washington Times. And it just changed the entire trajectory of my life because that response where he invited me to come and talk to him at his office in New Jersey then led to 4 years working for him. So I worked with him as a foreign policy assistant for the last 4 years of his life, from 1990 until his death in 94.
But it's amazing that you just, I mean, how many people would have taken that kind of step to reach out to,
a former president?
Right.
I know. You know what? When you're young and naive, you're kind of young and naive. And yeah, I mean, now I would think twice and reread every sentence of
the letter,
make sure it was perfect. And I did, obviously, at the time. But it sort of didn't even occur to me that I was writing to a former president. I just felt compelled to let that author know that he had really moved me and educated me, regardless of who it was.
I got to ask you one last question about Richard Nixon before we get into the topics today we're all talking about, which is Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and what it means to be conservative in 2016 heading to 2017. But in my family, if you say Richard Nixon, it's almost like saying an inflammatory word. You know,
the devil.
What was he like?
I was an admirer of his before I even wrote that letter. But the reason I'm a conservative is because of Ronald Reagan, not because of Richard Nixon. Ronald Reagan was in office when I was coming of age, when I was in junior high school. And I remember paying close attention to Reagan at that young age and thinking, yes, everything he is saying is exactly right, whether it's tax cuts, growing the economy, taking on the Soviet Union, rebuilding the military. And obviously, I was very young then, so I didn't understand why I thought he was right. I just had that instinctive reaction that, yeah, this guy is right. So he developed my political values. And as I got older, I realized why he was right. So I used to get into it with Nixon, actually, a little bit about conservative versus more progressive policies, because Nixon really wasn't a conservative the way we understand
right.
it today.
And that's what I want to talk to you about now, because as we get to Trump and Clinton, you and I have talked about something that I think unifies a lot of Americans, which is just an absolute love of our country and the values of this country. And I learned that from my loony liberal relatives, because they embody a different viewpoint on the left than the current left. And you talked about that in your book, What the Bleep Just Happened to My Country. You refer to Democrats of the past as happy warriors. And what I learned from my parents and what I embody today and why I identify as conservative is that, one, I think America is exceptional, one, because we do value the individual, two, we value the law because the law protects the individual not only from true threats but from the government.
Yes.
And three, there is no other country which goes to the lengths to do right than our country. And I know that our country has made mistakes and has on occasion perhaps done wrong. But for the most part, we are motivated by doing what is right. That's why I identify as a conservative. But yet today, to say that, to be a conservative, you get lambasted on college campuses. I mean, I don't bring up politics at dinner discussions with family because people roll their eyes and they write you off as crazy.
Right. America is the greatest idea that ever was. It is the greatest experiment in human liberty that ever was. The United States of America has a self-corrective mechanism built into it that allows it to change and correct the mistakes, slavery, for example, other things that we've been guilty of in the past, allows that self-corrective mechanism to kick in. And it once it kicks in, boom, the country is better than it was before and stronger than it was before. Very few other nations on earth have that ability and that quality. So what infuriates me is that the modern left is not the Democratic Party of your father and your grandfather. It's not the Democratic Party of Jimmy Carter or even of Bill Clinton. This is Barack Obama's Democratic Party, which means that it is a socialist party. It's no longer a Democratic Party. The DLC, moderate, blue dog, pragmatic Democrats don't exist anymore. They have gone extinct in Obama's America. This is a party of the radical far left, hence the rise of Bernie Sanders, hence the reason why he was so durable as a candidate for so long.
Hey, real quick, Bernie Sanders ditched the Democratic Party and went back to just being a socialist
right
after he didn't get the nomination.
Of course, but that's where the party is now.
Sure.
And all of the things you laid out about what makes America so exceptional is true, but the radical left rejects that. They think that the United States is guilty of, over the course of its history, guilty of so many gross injustices and, frankly, crimes against our own people and against people abroad, as occupying forces, not liberating forces, occupying forces and so on, that we are not worthy of global leadership. That's why Barack Obama has gutted the military. That's why he has retreated American power around the world, because they honestly believe that we are not worthy of that role internationally. Domestically, they hate everything that has made America great, including individual liberty, including economic freedom, including capitalism, including a strong national defense. And that's why when they are in positions of power, they roll all of those things back. Remember in 2008 when Obama was running for president, Adam, he kept using the phrase over and over again, the fundamental transformation of the nation. That's what I seek. That is what he told us point blank that that's what he was going to do. And he's done it.
And in your book, you know, when people hear what you've just said, I think people who would disagree with you would write us off as crazy. Yet in your book, you outline how that has come to be, and you bring up Saul Alinsky.
Yes.
What is the connection, and why is that important for people to listen? Right now, I have family members who might be listening who are their fists are clenched. But explain to them, as you did in the book, what has happened.
This is a very systematic, long-term project on the part of the left that goes back actually to the 1930s when the communists supported by Moscow infiltrated the United States and at first tried to overthrow the U.S. government from within in terms of literally overthrowing the system of government. When they realized they couldn't do that in the 1950s, they launched a wholesale attack on the main pillars of American society and culture in order to destroy us from within. The modern Democratic Party is an extension of what the communists began in the 1950s.
Yeah, this is not Jack Kennedy's Democratic Party. No,
it is absolutely not. Jack Kennedy was opposed to all of these forces, okay? But the modern Democratic Party, this has been a long-term project to attack American society and what has always made us great, attacking us economically and attacking us culturally. So they went in and they infiltrated the academy. So all of the universities,
right.
And then all the way down to, you know, junior high, grade school level, right?
We've discussed on this program, we just had on a guest last week, Milan Chatterjee, who the social media lynch mob went after because he tried to remain neutral on a political issue, and he was found guilty at UCLA of violating viewpoint neutrality. It's a bizarro Orwellian world.
Right, and that's all part of it. It's part of, I mean, there's a reason why George Orwell wrote 1984.
Oh, yes, four legs good, two legs better.
An Animal Farm, right, because he came out of the totalitarian system. That was a commentary on Nazi Germany and Stalin's Soviet Union. Well, what do you think is happening here? It's, if you go back and read 1984, as I did last summer, not this summer, but last summer, the memory hole thing. I mean, we are living this because this is the coming to fruition of what the left has been doing. They grab control of the news media. The left grab control of the academy and education all the way down. They grab control of the culture, Hollywood, movies, television, music. You are constantly bombarded in popular culture and education and everywhere else with a leftist message that the United States is not worthy of this, that we are at fault, that we are guilty. And so generation after generation has been indoctrinated in this message to the point now where the millennials were supporting the out socialist by like 92%.
So let me ask you this. Let's get to Trump and Clinton. A lot of conservatives have trouble with Donald Trump. What would you say to them as we get ready to vote for our next president?
I understand their concerns. I am a conservative. I do support Donald Trump. I've supported him for a long time because I got his phenomenon and I got him. And I understood that there would have been no reason for a Tea Party movement in 2009-2010, Adam. There would have been no rise of Donald Trump if the Republican Party had stayed true to its core foundational principles.
Accountability.
Yes, but also individual liberty, economic freedom, limited government. They went down the road of being Democrat light. They did not fight back against the Democrats now for decades. They certainly didn't fight back against Barack Obama in any meaningful way. They just basically waved him through on everything. They showed very little political courage. And the voters out there, conservative voters, have said, you know what? We have sent wave after wave of Republicans to Congress to fight back, to stop this leftist agenda we just talked about, to stop Barack Obama. And wave after wave got to Washington and promptly did nothing. They caved to special interests. They wanted to be liked by the New York Times editorial page. They didn't want to be made fun of by the Washington Post. So they didn't stand up and fight for the values that they told us they were going to fight. So you know what? We are now sick of all of y'all, and we're going to go try something completely different. Donald Trump, who stays on offense, is he perfect? Of course not. There is no perfect candidate. But he stays on offense, and he fights back. And for conservatives, I will say this. I understand there are a lot of concerns because Trump has never done this before. We don't know how he's going to govern. But you don't have to love the guy. You don't even have to like the guy. But if you care about the future of the country, there is one issue you should be – actually, two issues you should be voting on. One is the Islamic fundamentalist threat, which Donald Trump will take on, and Mrs. Clinton, as Secretary of State, U.S. Senator, failed to do that. And the second issue is the Supreme Court. Well, and if you care about those two things, which is the survival of the country, literally the survival, you should be voting for Donald Trump.
Before I ask you a question about Clinton, I just want to follow up with one thing. You know, people who are uncomfortable with some of the things Donald Trump has said, they say that he is a race baiter. He may not be a racist, but that he uses language that certainly inflames a portion of his supporters, not the majority of them, but a portion that might say, aha. And he uses language which is incredibly inflammatory. What do you say to the conservatives who find that uncomfortable?
I know that because he's an unconventional candidate, a lot of people are saying, oh, he's crass. I think most voters look at Donald Trump and do not see a racist. They see an attempt to smear a candidate who has real traction by calling him a racist, because that's the worst smear in America you can stick on anybody. But I think most voters are rejecting that. They see that as a leftist argument. They see that as a media narrative. That is fundamentally not true. And there's an interesting psychological thing going on, Adam, because every time he's attacked that way, his numbers go up. And the reason they go up is because most Americans see a champion in Trump. They are sick and tired of being turned into the enemy in their own country. For the last 8 years, if they've opposed Obama, they've been called racists, bigots, homophobes, Islamophobes. And they're like, no, I'm just trying to stand up for my country. I worry about my country. They're tired of being turned into the enemy in America. And Donald Trump is saying, I will be your champion. And so every time he's attacked that way, his numbers go up because people rally to him because they believe in him.
I have to start wrapping up. But Clinton, I have a friend, I won't name this person because I don't want to identify them, who is a fundraiser for the Democrats, who can't stand the Clintons, would never say this outside of, you know, the circle of friends, can't stand them, and yet still raises money for them. Why is it, and I hear this from the same people do not like Hillary Clinton.
Right.
That's what I hear from Democrats. You know, if they only liked her. I mean, it's clear that there's a large portion of the population that just doesn't. Can she be elected? Do you think she could win this election?
Look, anything is possible. The polls are tightening. You know, Trump, I think, is going to win the whole thing. But it is, of course, it's possible. It's Hillary Clinton. She's married to a former president. They have a huge machine. By the end of this process, they will have spent $2 billion. Not that money is determinative, but it's incredibly important. So, yes, of course she can win. But she has a huge enthusiasm gap. And recent numbers show black voters are not coming out or don't intend to come out in the numbers that came out for Obama. Same thing with younger voters. Hillary Clinton right now is only scoring about half of the millennial vote that Barack Obama did. If that's true, she's in big trouble. And then if you add Donald Trump making some inroads into the black vote, if he's able to get, say, 12-13% of the black vote, this election is over. So the dynamics are very fluid, and there are major realignments going on, Adam, that nobody yet has a handle on. You saw it with Brexit, and I think you're going to see it here.
Well, I agree with you, by the way. I had the good fortune, and I'm grateful to Fox for sending me to Europe to cover Brexit for 2 weeks during that whole thing. And I remember interviewing Nigel Farage. I always mispronounce his name because people were shocked that it won. And what I always equate it to is a very good friend of mine in Cleveland who is a steelworker who has lived globalization. Now, I don't have time to talk about the benefits and the cons of globalization. But what I say to my friends who don't understand the Brexit vote, I say to them is, you cannot explain to my buddy in Cleveland what globalization has done for him. His standard of living has fallen. His income has fallen. And why would you make the case to him that it's been good for him?
Peggy Noonan had the best turn of phrase to describe this, because it's the elites, the global elites on both sides of the aisle, the bipartisan
Republicans
ruling elite,
and Democrats.
Right. It's the global elite versus everybody else. And Peggy Noonan's phrase, and I love it so much, I wish I had thought of it. She terms it as the protected versus the unprotected. So the global elites, people who have power and influence and money, they're protected. They jump in their limos. They go out to dinner. They don't have to bear the consequences of the decisions of the global elite the way the unprotected do. You know, the people who don't have power, don't have influence, they're working all the time just trying to make ends meet. They have to live on the ground with these economies. They have to live on the ground with these immigration policies that are flooding their countries with Muslim immigrants, Syrian refugees, Mexican immigrants, as Trump has been talking about. You name it, they are living on the ground, unprotected by the consequences of decisions being made in Brussels and Washington and London and elsewhere. And regular folks are sick and tired of it. They feel their standard of living is going down. They feel unsafe. They feel economically insecure. And they've had enough. And they're ready to try something completely different. And it's not just a message sending. A lot of elections are like, I'm going to send a message to my party because I hate their guts and I'm going to teach them a lesson. This year is different because Donald Trump's appeal is not ideological. It's attitudinal. So there's something more than just a message.
He can genuinely say the United States is the greatest country on earth. He's not lying when he says it.
No, because he's a result of the greatness.
Right. And you get the sense that when certain people on the left say that, they don't mean it. They'll say it.
Right.
You know, the United States is great. That's how they'll say it.
Well, if you believe that, why are you trying to tear her down? Why are you trying to destroy the very pillars that made her so strong and great? That's my question back to the left.
We're going to stop there. I love running into you in the hallways here at Fox because we always have the 2-minute catch up on politics. But thank you so much for joining us. Very quickly, is there a follow up to What the Bleep Just Happened to My Country? Is there a new book coming out?
I am thinking seriously about doing it. Thank you for asking. I have to wait and see how November 8th works out. I don't want to start a book now and then have the election go a completely different way. So let's see what the election turns out to be. That will determine what course the country is going to take. And then I'll be writing a new book.
And people can follow you through the Washington Times. You have a column that you publish in the Washington Times.
Every Thursday runs in the Washington Times, washingtontimes.com. Also on Twitter, at Monica Crowley. On Facebook, at Monica Crowley NY for New York. And the website is monicamemo.com. And Fox News, of course.
Of course. Monica Crowley, thank you very much for being on
Always
Talkonomics.
A pleasure. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you for joining us again for Talkonomics. Let me know what you think of Monica Crowley. You can send your thoughts to me through Twitter, at AJSHAPS, at AJ Shaps, and let me know if you have guests you'd like to hear on Talkonomics. We are open to all kinds of discussions, not only from the conservative viewpoint, but also from the left. I've reached out to the left, the communists I keep talking about over at Hunter College, who kept denying me, and then they had to close their organization because it turned out they didn't have enough women in leadership, and they accused each other of being sexist. So, you know, they were eating themselves alive, I guess. But truly, we want to have an open discussion here, and I appreciate you joining us.